Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of What's in the Box. I'm one of your co-hosts, Drew, or Quad Nines, and joined, as always, by Zakil.
What's going on, guys? Glad to have you. Glad to be able to have this show tonight. It's going to be our Dragons of Tarkir spoiler show. Today we're going to talk about, obviously, all the cards that came out in the new set, what it means for Cube, what are there, you know, are there any auto-includes? I have a different opinion than I think the majority of people do about this set, but we'll get into that in a minute. Then we're also going to be talking about sleeves and storage, which is a hot topic in the Cube community. If you go on Reddit, go on MTG Salvation, all of the big forums have a huge, you know, huge forum, huge thread about it. And there's some sweet options out there. And then also today the judge promos and new commander rules were spoiled. So just kind of touch on that for a minute and, you know, go from there. So I think we should probably start out with the Dragons of Tarkir, spoiler. So before we get into this, what do you think about the entire block from cons? We had cons, which was an excellent set. We got fetch lands. We got a bunch of sweet cards. Fate Reforged. We got a bunch of sweet stuff. And then finishing off the block here, we have Dragons of Tarkir. So, you know, where are you at on the whole block?
Well, I think it's definitely added a lot more cards than I thought it would after seeing the first set. You know, the first set, cons was the big thing, was the reprinting fetch lands. Yay. A couple of planeswalkers. But at the time I was like, another black white Sauron and another Sarkin, but this Sarkin's actually pretty good. So there's a bit, like a lot of the actual con cards, like the original Narset and Surak and all those were very underwhelming from a Cube standpoint. Then you had stuff like Clever Impersonator, you know, so the first set was like okay. And then I think in Fate Reforged, there are a couple really, really good cards, mm-hmm. and some okay diversifying cards, like for example the Flesh Marauder execute whatever the Executioner is, mm-hmm. you know, it's the same card print, or you could have two of them, I guess, if you wanted, or if you just like the new art better. But you know, it gave you some options and a couple really good cards. This set I don't think is great in Dragons, but there's just enough in here that the block was pretty good for Cube. Mm-hmm. You know, especially since with every new Magic set, it's harder to break into Cube because you have to be, in most cases, you have to be the best card at this mana cost doing this thing. So,
Yeah, and I think one of the interesting things about this block is we actually got a lot of blue cards. You're saying Clever Impersonator. I'm running both Dig Through Time and Treasure Cruise from the original cons. Mm-hmm. I'm sure, I can't think off the top of my head, but I'm sure there were a couple other spicy things that came out. Tasigur, Pseudo Blue, and Bug. And it's kind of hard to break into some of those colors because, once again, blue is so good. And we saw, Treasure Cruise being played in Legacy and Vintage, which ended up being banned and restricted. And the power level of those cards was surprisingly strong enough to be able to transition into Cube, because a lot of cards that are good in a constructed format aren't necessarily always good in Cube. So that was interesting. It was a nice change, to be honest. And Clever Impersonator is still beating my expectations every time I see it.
Yeah, that one I kind of expected to be good, but when you play with it, you actually understand how good it can be. Like you're talking about, you know, Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time, you know, bannable in Modern, Treasure Cruise banned in Legacy. And, you know, those cards, at first you're like, well, they're okay, but there really hadn't been a good enough delve card printed. Like, you know, we had Tombstalker that some people still ran, and there's a couple other cards but the delve mechanic just hadn't been used any. And then when we, you know, get to find out that it's not that hard to draw three cards for one mana when you've got things like fetch lands and a lot of good instants and sorceries. So, so I was really actually happy with the block overall. Is a lot more rounded as opposed to, like, say, Theros block, which had a couple of cards, but, you know, it was not like all the colors didn't get something, I guess you could say.
Yeah. And, you know, once again, you know, not to downplay fetch lands, like, but that was, I think, huge. Out of anything, that was probably the most impactful thing out of the entire block. Not only did fetch land prices come down for those of us that didn't have them, But even the Zendikar fetch lands fell because, you know, okay, we still need, you know, maybe we still need Scalding Tarn and Aaron Mesa and those guys, but, you know, we can supplement for now. Like, there's some good stuff. So seeing Flooded Strand and Polluted Delta being reprinted, being able to get them not only in English, but, you know, foreign ones, foil ones, Jap foreign foil ones, all that crazy stuff for the guys who like to go all the way out was really cool and, you know, very affordable. And I think that's one of the things about Magic that a lot of people overlook is, you know, just having fun and being able to get all the cards that you need at an affordable price is, to me, is pretty fun, too. So,
I like keeping both my kidneys, so that definitely helps.
Yeah. So before we get into this, continuing on, what do you think, you know, what were your expectations coming in seeing a tricolor set? Because, you know, we had one in the past with the shards, and once again, I was really, I guess, kind of turned off by it when I saw it, because a lot of the cards were really not necessarily disappointing, but they just didn't look that good. And then when you get into cube, it's kind of like, I really need to prioritize my mana if I want to run three colors. Like, I some people I've seen even have added an extra cycle of lands in their cubes because they're now going full three colors. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what were your expectations and, you know, where do you kind of settle now in terms of three color? Like, all of, did you ever, so basically, did you add any of, like, specific Obzon? Did you add Siege Rhino and, you know, delegate each color a card, or what did you do?
Well, I was waiting for the set or the block to finish out before I, you know, definitely jammed one of each into my cube. Like, I did add Siege Rhino because it's just such a strong card. Mm-hmm. I think Butcher the Horde is the Mardu one right now.
Mm-hmm.
But like I hadn't, like I still don't have a Tamer card in there or, you know, Rug right now, but that's going to change. But yeah, like I was actually pretty pleased with some of the tricolor cards. I haven't jammed a bunch of extra mana fixing in my cube, but my cube's got pretty good mana fixing anyway. So,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's definitely some, I think they hit the power level on some of the three color cards, you know, high enough that they're definitely cube worthy. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I have also, you know, pretty much I'm going to try out the same thing. I'm not sure if I'm going to keep them in. I haven't had too much experience with playing the three-color cards. I also waited, apart from me just kind of not paying attention to Magic as much recently. I've just been really busy. But, you know, I definitely want to try. Like, I know Siege Rhino is very, very, very doable. And I think one of the other challenges for me is what cards am I going to include in those slots and how many slots am I going to, you know, set aside for tricolors because, for example, I think Usman Jamil from the third power. He puts the cards that have the effect, like Tassiger. How do you like the tricolor cards, but not tricolor cards associated with,
It reminds me of like, was it Eventide? Like, you know, like anything with hybrid mana,
mm-hmm.
You know, you can, like in that block, it was hybrid mana in the casting cost usually, but you could play it in a monocolored deck. You know, it was no big deal. This, like, they're kind of three color cards, but it's really easy to slot into two color deck.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't really consider Tassiger a tricolor card, although he technically is.
Yeah. So. And that's where a lot of people have kind of had disagreements and just kind of, you know, different opinion. And I think that's going to be interesting to try to test out. I also don't think that Tassiger is once again, you said he is a three color card, but you don't need to play him. He's perfectly fine in green, black, or even green, blue, or just mono black if you're just going to play him as a, you know, whatever, a five drop leader in the game, but, or six drop or whatever he is. But yeah, so, with that said, Dragons of Tarkir, So, Dragons of Tarkir, what were you most excited about in this set? Before we break down into each individual color, what were the slam includes? You know, what was, you know, just like craziness when you saw it in the spoiler? Did you have any? Because I had a couple that I was really excited about.
I did too. Like, unless it's just really obviously bad, I always give Planeswalkers a shot. And Narset is blue-white, and I love me some blue-white, so... You know, huge loyalty, so I definitely want to try her out. You know, mm-hmm. She may not be that good, but in a lot of my blue-white decks, like, I have, like, two creatures and 20 spells. So she's going to draw me a card, you know, half the time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm definitely excited about playing her. I like the new Sarkhan. Like I said, it's going to fill my teamer spot that's open right now. That's a card I need to play with. Other than that, like the commands, when I saw the first one, which is, you know, Cryptic Command Light, definitely not as good, but still, you know, getting to do two things on one card and getting the modes. I like all the modal cards.
Mm-hmm.
So the commands kind of excited me. There's only a couple of them I'm going to try out. I'm not trying out the whole cycle. And then, you know, just, everybody made fun of Zergo because he's so much smaller than he was in his Khan's, you know, counterpart, but he's also much more playable because he's a 2/1 with no actual drawback. I mean, yeah, you can't randomly chump block late in the game if you need to, but yeah, whatever.
So yeah, okay.
So that's fine. He's got a dash ability, which is, you know, sometimes going to be relevant. So, you know, just those are the cards that really, got my originally. And then Sidisi, like the more I read it, the more I like it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Demonic Tutor on a stick, really. So, or right. I guess it'd be more like Diabolic Tutor because it's going to cost you 4 or 5. So,
yeah, I agree. I always seem to get excited over like uncommons, and it's always the cards like Dragon Hunter or like the Reclamation Sages or something like that that I'm so excited about. And when I saw Dragon Hunter, I was like, yes, another 2/1 for 1. And then I saw Zergar, I was like, yes, another 2/2 for 1. So, you know, those two cards I think are, for me, the most exciting. But, I mean, we still have the Planeswalkers. Like, I'm also going to give Narset a try. I'm not sure on Sarkhan yet. The rug colors are really interesting because I don't know if people still play Maelstrom Wanderer. I think he's kind of expensive and a little unnecessary, but I have like a weird connection to him. He used to be an old commander of mine, and then I got rid of him, and I kind of want to build him again. So I have one random copy laying around, but I don't know. So we'll see. I definitely think Sarkhan is very good. And then, of course, we have a couple of the commands, which are really sweet, and a couple of the morphs, which are really interesting as well. So I guess we should probably just start this in a Wooburg order. So going down the list, was there any card that really jumped out at from you? Actually, no. Let's just start with Dragon Hunter. Dragon Hunter, 2/1 for 1 protection from dragons. Dragon Hunter can block dragons as though it had reach. Include for you or pass?
I'm gonna definitely include it. You know, it's strictly better than Savannah Lions, strictly better than Elite Vanguard, and I play those cards. So, I wouldn't try this out or just automatically play it. I don't know what I'm going to cut for it. I might not necessarily cut one of those two cards I just mentioned, but definitely going to try it out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree. I think, you know, White continues to get better and better, and unfortunately, he doesn't block Stormbreath Dragon, but he's still, you know, he's still excellent. I mean, I guess the protection from dragons, I don't think is very, it's going to be very relevant in Cube, apart from maybe like Thunder Maw and a couple other random stuff.
Well, Stormbreath Dragon can't block him either.
Yeah, there you go.
But it's like White Knight and Black Knight. They're just destined to just pass by each other. Never going to come into contact.
Yep. I think, once again, I am a big fan of the Third Power. I think they put on an excellent podcast, and both of the hosts are, you know, excellent. And it's interesting to hear Usman talk about how he encourages people to not cut a card for Dragon Hunter because you can never, you know, you're not cutting cards like this when you're building an aggro deck. You're cutting maybe like your random 3-drop that you don't need because how important it is for decks to get their 1-drops. Like having this, having Savannah Lions, having, like, I'm going to swap this out for Elite Vanguard because I just don't like that card. It's way too bland. It looks ugly. But, you know, the more 1-drops that we get that are this good, the better it is for aggro. And a lot of people, there's often a misrepresentation of aggro in a lot of cubes. That's something I've come into contact with in the Legacy Cube that I personally think, which we can talk about in a bit. But, you know, the more of these you have in your cube, the easier it is to draft an aggro deck. And a lot of times the aggro decks are the ones that need a little bit more help than the dirtily mid-range control strategies.
Where's the other card? I haven't heard a lot of people mention it, but it's part of the Megamorph cycle, the Hidden Dragon Slayer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rare. I like it a lot. It's a, you know, it's a 2-power, 2-mana lifelinking white creature, but, you know, if you want to take the turn to play it as a morph and you can flip it, it kills something 4-power greater, which, I don't know, I like removal on creatures.
Mm-hmm.
That was the one in white that I wanted to try out the most. Just because I'm trying to make my morph section a little bit stronger, and this block really helps you do that. This particular set did have pretty much, I think, at least one creature in each color. It was pretty good for morph.
Mm-hmm.
Megamorph in particular. I don't really like the pretty lazy keyword naming, but whatever. You know, can't come up with something better. I mean, it's better than multi-kicker, I guess.
I think morph was really interesting because, for me, as someone who runs a higher power level cube, I think oftentimes morph is not good enough. But the difference is, I think in a lot of cubes, and even in powered cube, you can still run morph. We had, for the longest time, people who tried to support morph were playing cards like Exalted Angel and Blistering Firecat, and then even earlier this year, like Reclamation Sage, which are all good cards, but there still wasn't, you know, enough variety to really do much. One of the things I liked about Dragons of Tarkir is that we got cards, you know, at least one in each color that was actually good. Hidden Dragon Slayer, Stratus Dancer, Silmgar Assassin, Iron Shaman, Den Protector, you know, all of those cards are actually solid. So if you do want to support morph, you actually can. Once again, Hidden Dragon Slayer and another card which we'll get to later both have removal on a stick when you flip them up. And the Megamorph, I think, was really interesting as well. And, you know, Hidden Dragon Slayer is one of the cards where you can actually just cast. And a lot of the cards are just like this. Casting them as a 2-drop, 2-1 for 1, or 2-1 for 2 with lifelink or flying or whatever it is sometimes just enough to get you to win the game. So,
what did you think about Anafenza, the other 2-mana, 2-power white card?
I liked her, to be honest. I liked her a lot. I think it's a card you have to play with because she's double white, I think it's a little bit more difficult to slaughter her in. But once again, I think that white weenie strategy is very, very good. And I'm not sure how she competes in the 2-drop slot. I don't think she's an embarrassing card to run by any means.
If only she wasn't dead. A spirit soldier. If she was a human, which a lot of cubes in white, humans are really more important, you know, sub theme. But yeah, she's dead. So spirit soldier. Not the worst. Also the non-token creature. If it was not non-token, it'd be almost busted. I would say for white.
It'd be very strong.
Yeah. But yeah, it's still probably okay. I don't know that I'm gonna run it. I've got a lot of 2-power, you know, 2-drops in white. I'm gonna probably wait and see on that one and see if what other people will say first.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a card that's not embarrassing to run. Like, I don't think this card is bad by any means. I'm just not sure how it competes in the 2-drop slot. So, another card we have is Ajutai Exemplars. 2 colorless and 2 white for 4/4 with a bunch of modal abilities. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, choose one. Tap target creature. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, but gains first strike and lifelink, and you can also blink him. So exile him, then return it to the battlefield tapped under its owner's control.
You know, a lot of people don't like this card for standard, but once again, I actually like it pretty good in cube. The big drawback is it is a white 4-drop, and there's some really strong white 4-drops.
Yeah,
definitely. You've got Hero of Bladehold, Resto. I'm going blank right now. But, you know, there's quite a few that it's going to be kind of hard to break in. The difference is, like, you know, you're here of Bladehold, yeah, it can win the game by itself, but, you know, it usually goes in a mid-range deck or even a top end of an aggro build. Resto, you got Sublime Archangel. Of course, you want a lot of creatures because more Exalted triggers.
Mm-hmm.
People at America Angel. You know, there's a lot of good white four drops. This one I like because, like I said, in some of my white-blue control decks, I might only have one or two creatures, and if this is one of them, that means I'm probably going to have a lot of instants and sorceries or just non-creature things, like Planeswalkers trigger it. But, you know, even if you just have, like, that Brainstorm in your hand and they go to kill it, you're like, Brainstorm, oh, by the way, basically counter your spell.
So, yeah.
Like I said, I don't think it's really good in Standard, but I'm going to try it out for Cube, which kind of says a lot because, like I said, breaking in the white 4-drop is pretty tough.
Yeah. The thing I kind of dislike about this card is a lot of times you're going to be playing it in blue-white, and when I see it, I think of it more as like a control finisher, which I don't necessarily think it competes with a lot of them. Like, if you're still playing Aetherling, I think Aetherling is a much better option than this. But in terms of white, once again, it is very, very interesting because if this, do you think this card would be much, well, like significantly better if when you blinked it, it came back at end of turn as opposed to immediately tapped?
Yeah, it definitely would because then you could, you know, get around board wipes, being the big thing. Now it's still going to, you know, get around spot removal, which is okay. But it comes back and play tapped, so it's not that big a deal, but yeah, it gets around board wipes is the big one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, I think, the biggest thing about this guy, but I don't know. Because once again, I think he's a very, very solid option, and being able to just, I guess, you know, sometimes just tapping down a creature and attacking with your team is the way to go, and this guy gives you that option, so very, very excited for that. So what did you think about Rebound in this set? There's a couple cards here that I think are pretty good.
I think the best one's probably Artful Maneuver, if that's the one you're thinking of, is one of the good ones. Mm-hmm. Pump spell, instant speed. It's only 2 mana, which is good. And, you know, they said, well, they see it coming on the Rebound. I'm like, it's free. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, like, 2 mana for this effect is perfectly fine. The fact you get it for free on your next turn is just gravy. So it does help out like your kind of aggro builds. I like Rebound in general as a mechanic. When I think of Rebound, I think like usually removal, like consuming vapors and stagger shock, stuff like that. So I kind of like most of the cards I've seen in this were like the white pump spell. There's a protection spell. And I'm trying to remember what the blue one is. They're a pretty decent blue one.
The blue one puts in a 2/2.
Yeah, it's a little expensive, but it's, you know, I like creatures and getting another one the next turn. So, but I like Rebound as a mechanic. So,
yeah, no, I was, yeah, with that said, I was looking at Profound Journey, which is like 7 mana, return target permanent card from your graveyard to the battlefield. I think this card is just way too expensive. I've seen a couple people say they really like it, but a lot of the things, I think they kind of stapled a Rebound into a lot of cards that are just too expensive.
It just kind of screams Commander at me at that mana cost, you know?
Yeah, that is true. So, yeah, I don't know. Interesting to see. Erishin Foremost, the 2W for 1/2/2 double strike, and then when he enters the battlefield or attacks, another creature gains, or another target warrior gains double strike. So like Silverblade Paladin-esque card. You think this is good enough to make both or the majority of cubes?
I really don't think so. Like it just when they tack on the warrior, that just kills it. I mean, you'd have to have it'd have to be tribal cube. It'd just flat out have to be a tribal cube to be playable. Cause I mean, it's not like granted, if you attack with it and then they kill it, you still get the trigger for another warrior if you have one. So they can't blow you out like they could with Silverblade Paladin where they can just kill what it's, you know, soul bonded to and then block it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, Silverblade Paladin is just a better card to me.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's cases you can make, but them tacking warrior onto it just kills it.
Mm-hmm.
But the art's cool, so plus for that.
Yeah, there you go. There's also Secure the Wastes. And when I see this card, we're talking about it before the show, I think of M15 Limited. That's the most recent one in which I just remember like white being super strong with Raise the Alarm and Triplicant Spirits. If you remember that format, it was pretty annoying to play against white if you didn't open the Triplicant Spirits. But obviously a bit different. It's one white and X to put X 1/1 white warrior creature tokens onto the battlefield at instant speed. So this can be a control finisher. This can be a if you're playing like an aggro, I guess you can put it, you know, X is 3 as an option for top end if you need it or something like that. I don't know. But I think this card is really good, but just falls short in a lot of cubes because I think the area which you're probably trying to cast it for is between like 3 to 5 guys maybe. Mm-hmm. And paying, you know, this effect for 4 to 6, 7, 8 mana is... I don't know, maybe just not worth it, because especially in white where you're playing cards like Elspeth, which create 3 tokens, or even Hero of Bladehold, which creates 2 for 4 and a body kind of thing. But this card is not bad by any means. What do you think about it?
Well, it's about as cheap as rate as you're going to get, because, you know, 1X, mm-hmm. pretty good, but you're only getting 1/1s. Thinking back to the last, or Scars block, I think it's actually in Mirrored Image, because it was one of the Zeniths, the White Sun Zenith. I believe it was 3 white X, instant speed, but then you get 2/2 cat tokens, I believe.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at 6 mana, you get 6 power for that card. Mm-hmm. Whereas this card, for 6 mana, you get 5 power. Now, it's across more bodies, so that makes your anthem effects better, as far as like them having to block you. Mm-hmm. But I don't play White Sun Zenith, and... like I said, this card is okay, but I think it just falls short just a little bit. Mm-hmm. Unless you just are really big on anthems and pump effects and just like swarm strategies. So, I think the White Sun Zenith is a much better control finisher because, you know, the game goes longer. You have a bunch of mana and then, oh, by the way, bam, I've got a bunch of 2/2s. Whereas this is more of an aggro mid-range card that you really need pump effects for.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree. What else in white here? I'm looking. Nothing is striking me.
Just looking over my notes, I don't really see anything else in...
Myth Realized?
Oh, Myth Realized, the enchantment.
Mm-hmm.
So
for those of you who don't know, Myth Realized is one white enchantment. Whenever you cast an non-creature spell, put a lore counter. You can also pay 2 colorless and 1 white to put a lore counter on Myth Realized, and then pay, as a second ability, you can pay 1 white, and until end of turn, Myth Realized becomes a monk avatar creature in addition to its other types, and gains this creature's power and toughness are each equal to the number of lore counters on it. So, interesting. It costs 1 mana.
Yeah, it's got one of the biggest things going for it that I like in Magic games, and it's threat of activation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you get this thing down, you cast a ponder or a burn spell or two, and it gets a couple counters on it. All of a sudden, your aggro opponent can't attack in because you got open mana because you'll just ambush them. But if you don't attack, then you go to your instep and then they just play another instant and it gets bigger. So, it's kind of a dilemma, for that, but, you know, if you ever do activate it, you know, I hate to say it, but dice removal. But I mean, it's, it seems okay. Like, the deck that wants this, I think, is more of a control deck that's not doing much on turn one anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it does, like I said, it does give you threat of activation, which, you know, sometimes is just enough to, you know, to make them not want to attack you. And you know, it, worst case is, yeah, you activate it, use some mana, and they trade a real card for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree.
That's definitely one that I want to see somebody else break and play with and show me how it's good before I go to, you know, slotting it in, I guess. But it definitely has potential. Mm-hmm. It's just, I'll let Travis Wu figure that out first.
Okay, so... we have next is blue, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
What were there any cards out of blue that really struck you off the bat to be super impressive?
The half Dungeon Geist, half Frost Titan, the Icefall Regent.
Mm-hmm.
it does actually slot right between their mana cost. It's a 5 mana. It's 3 and 2 blue. Dragon, it's a 4/3. You know, so you get one more power than Dungeon Geist for one more mana. But it also has, it's got the same thing where you tap down target creature your opponent controls. It doesn't untap for as long as you have it. But it has the bottom ability of Frost Titan, where spells your opponent casts that target Icefall Regent cost 2 more. Not and abilities, which stacked onto Frost Titan, spell and abilities, it's just spells. But, you know, if it makes their, you know, Hero's Downfall cost 5, that seems like a pretty good rate. Mm-hmm. Just to kind of tax them a little bit. And every once in a while, you get the person that doesn't read the card and they tap out for removal. And you're like, yeah, sure, great, count it.
So, gotcha.
Wait, actually, I don't know if that works. Actually, I'm reading it again now. It says cost 2 more to cast, so I don't, like, I know with Frostlight, it'll let you cast it, and then it just, you have to pay the 2 or it gets countered. I'm not sure about the wording on this.
Yeah. I don't believe you're able to cast it, actually.
You just can't cast it. Oh, well, that's actually worse. It's still pretty good. I still like the card. But yeah. God, they're making people play correctly. this Theros block all over again. Yes, sure. Put your enchantment on this thing. You can't get blown out.
Yeah, no, he's a sweet one. I think he's a 4/3. Which every time I see something with 3 toughness, when I'm reading a card for cube, there's always kind of like lights, or, well, not lights, but like some flashing siren going off in my head being like, stay away, stay away. But, you know, that Frost Titan ability, I think, kind of, mitigates that a bit. So, yeah, he's an excellent option. Do you think he makes it in the majority of cubes when it's all said and done after everybody has tested it among cards like Frost Titan and Sword of Temptation and, things that have similar abilities, Dungeon Geists?
Well, I don't speak for, like, the few cube lists I've looked at. The 5-drop slot in blue creatures is not really that big. Like, you've got Cloudscape, which is not actually a 5-drop, it's a 2-drop. Mm-hmm. You've got Ball Drifter, which kind of is a 3-drop that draws you cards, you know. But, like, the only actual definite 5-drops I play are Moloku, which is getting kind of old, and Teferi, which, you know, triple blue, hard to cast, but has very unique abilities.
Wait, who is it again? Sorry?
Oh, Teferi.
Oh, sorry. Teferi. Teferi, yeah.
Yeah, Teferi. Yeah. You know, if you're playing Dungeon Geist and, you know, you're kind of glutted at the 4-drop, which my cube actually is, I'm definitely considering, you know, swapping them and seeing if there's that much difference. The 1 mana for the 1 power and the little bit more evasion. So yeah, I think it just, most people could probably try it out. There's not just a ton of great blue 5-drop creatures, and it replaces a 4-drop, which I think there's a lot of, you know? So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he's going to be interesting. I'm going to test him out and see how he does, but I think... And
he's a dragon, in case you want to run any Dragon Matters cards. People like the dragons.
Yeah. Yeah, I will definitely test him out. I'm not sold yet, but he definitely could see a slot. But we'll see. Going into the morph cycle, we have the blue one, which is Stratus Dancer. For 1 blue and a colorless, you get a 2/1 with flying. And Megamorph, you can pay 1 colorless and a blue to flip it up and get a +1/+1 counter. And when it is turned face up, counter target instant or sorcery spell. This guy is pretty solid, to be honest.
It's my kind of card, you know, a cheap blue flyer that you can counter something with. So
I like it. I like him a lot. I think this guy makes it in the majority of cubes. Apart from that, like, sometimes just playing a Welkin turn for 2 mana is enough to win the game. You know, as there are games in which you just get free wins because your creatures fly. And, you know, the morph ability, I think, is just an added bonus. But, you know, 2 mana for, once again, a flying guy is sometimes enough to just get you the game. So he's an excellent, you know, excellent guy. I definitely am going to try him out and see if, I don't know how long he's going to stay, but this guy will definitely get a shot. I think he's pretty solid.
I do too. Like I said, I like creatures that have a spell-like abilities tacked onto them that, you know, I am trying to bulk up my morph section. And one of the better things about morph, I wasn't a big fan of it before this block, but, you know, sometimes, like, you just need to play a body on turn three to not die.
Yeah.
And you don't have to worry about getting color screwed. Like, if you have three mana, you can pay three colorless and you have a 2/2. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes that's enough to stall out to where you can stabilize and all that. So, I think morphs that have cool abilities that are playable just really help out, gameplay.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think you're completely correct.
Let me see. What else? Oh, apparently R&D is telling us that Dismiss is OP.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, I really like the art on that new card.
Oh, the art's amazing. We're talking about Contradict.
Contradict, yeah, yeah, yeah. That guy is sweet.
Yeah, it's 3/2 blue for Dismiss, which is traditionally 2/2 blue. But the art is much better, I will say that. But, yeah, apparently Dismiss, too strong.
Yeah.
Let me see. Oh, there's also this, if you have Storm in your cube, I have a fair amount of Storm in my cube. Most of it's, you know, blue-red. There's black, of course, for Tendrils.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and you just get random upside cards, like, you know, Young Pyromancer, or I've seen, you know, Gutter Snipe being run in cubes, and, you know, it's can be done, you know, if that's what you're going for. There's one called Elusive Spell Fist that's a 2-mana 1/3,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, blue tends to like 2-mana 1/3s. You know, you got your Augur of Bolas and stuff like that, you know, they get down, they block, you know, their 2/1s can't get through them. They block 2/2s all day. And this one has a pretty good ability tapped on it. It says when you cast a non-creature spell, it gets +1/+0 until end of turn and can't be blocked this turn. My problem in Storm decks is sometimes I just don't have anything to do the first few turns. Like, you're just trying to sculpt the hand and go off, but you're using draw spells and, you know, filtering effects to kind of get your hand right. Mm-hmm. With this guy, you know, sometimes you just cast a draw spell, nope, cast another something, or kill their guy, and, like, this guy gets pumped, you get in there for a couple of damage. You know, it's just something to think about if your blue section needs more roadblocks, I guess, that have marginal upside.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's a pretty sweet card. Like, often those Spells Matters cards are some on their own are fine, but just the upside value is just always sweet to have. next, we have reprint of Negate with new art.
It's better than the Circle.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's interesting.
The flavor text is pretty good. I gotta give it that. Okay. It's the smack talk that I like on my counter spells.
Definitely. So, let's see.
There's the other Travis Wu invitational card, Living Lore, which you can get some, I'm sure there's some really sweet combos you can get with that. It's not really a cute card. I wouldn't play it, but it's a pretty sweet card. I guess the design, they did go out there for design on that one though.
Mm-hmm.
That this card, you know, it gives them a little bit of a pass on the Megamorph naming, but anyway, I really don't see a time blue.
Did we talk about Shorecrasher Elemental?
No, we didn't. Yeah, okay. The triple blue mythic.
Yeah, triple blue mythic just costs 3 blue, and you can 3 blue for a 3/3. You can pay 1 blue and exile him, then return it to the battlefield face down under its owner's control. You can also pay 1 colorless to give him +1/-1 or -1/+1. And he has a Megamorph for 4 colorless and a blue. A lot of people are, you know, saying that Master Waves is going to be really sweet and standard with this guy, and he seems awesome. And we were talking before the show again that I think Shorecrasher Elemental, if you do push Devotion of any kind, especially in blue with Thassa, Master of Waves, and, you know, that kind of deck, this guy is pretty sweet. But I mean, I don't know. To me, he's kind of boring. The triple blue is a little off-putting, but he's cool.
I do like the ability where you can go either way, because, you know, sometimes you pump it for combat, and then they got to burn it, and you can just pump it the other way so it doesn't die. Mm-hmm. You know, it's it definitely makes your combat step a lot more interesting, giving mm-hmm. you all the, you know, all the options, I suppose. Obviously, it's not as good as something like Aetherling, you know, that's all the options, but it costs 3 mana, and it's a 3/3 in blue, which is okay. But I'm like you, I think if you're trying to push devotion, maybe, but it's, I don't know, it's a little different. There's only certain decks would probably want it. Like, you pretty much have to have Master of Wave to really want this card.
Yeah.
Or,
I agree.
Or Thassa, maybe, I guess you want to turn her over. So.
So, I think that's it for blue, unless I'm missing something.
Anticipate is cool, it's just not as good as Impulse. So,
yeah.
It's 3 instead of 4. So, you know.
I think that card is also not, like, embarrassingly bad. I think you could play that card, but it's not necessarily that good, if that makes sense. Like, I think a lot of cubes, if you have a bigger cube, maybe like in the 700, or maybe even like past 540, where you're kind of stretched thin for a lot of cantrip-y style cards, I think Anticipate's mm-hmm. fine. Yeah,
I almost think it would have been better if you could put the other two cards in your graveyard.
Yeah.
What is it? Forbidden Alchemy, which is at 3 mana. Mm-hmm. It looks at 4.
Or Strategic Planning, I think.
Did that one go in the graveyard?
But that one's Sorcery. I'm pretty sure it goes in the graveyard.
Yeah, I think it does. So, you know, this one's kind of like the Jace Architect of Thought. Only you don't get as many cards to look at. They go on bottom, and half the time you're like, oh, I wish I could put this in the yard, but I can't. So, anyway, but... yeah, that's really about all for blue, unless we're just forgetting something.
Eh.
Oh, there's the new dragon counterspell. If you have a dragon tribal cube, was it Sulamgar Scorn?
Oh yeah. Well, we'll leave that for the tribal cube guys to dig through.
I mean, it's technically like, was it Force Spike?
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's technically a double blue Force Spike that, oh, by the way, I've got this dragon, so just counterspell, but it's just, yeah. they get around, like, actually giving us counterspell so many ways.
I mean, that card is, that's a card. But yeah, so, with that said, going into black, black was pretty cool. Some sweet stuff. So when I first saw Exploit, I was like, okay, there has to be something like, really busted. And we got one card that's pretty good, but I was really hoping we'd get kind of like some like flash flying guy that does a little bit more than whatever they made. I forget what he does, but
actually went in blue.
Yeah, there is one, and he's okay, but I wanted some like mythic with Exploit that was, you know, doing something crazy, like you could DT for 3 mana or something like that. But we didn't get it, of course. But Exploit is a mechanic, which is also in blue, is when that target creature comes into play, you can sacrifice a creature, and then there's an exploit ability. So one of the cards, I think it's, is it, what is it? What is her name?
Sidisi?
Yeah, Sidisi. So let me find the card really quickly. And unless you know what it does off the top of your head, I think.
Actually, it's a, what was it? I was just looking at it, and I scrolled up the page.
All right.
Here it is. Well, I said here it is. It was going in alphabetical order, and then it just said no. Okay, it starts back over. Okay, so DC Undead Vizier is 5 mana, 3 and 2 black, and legendary creature, not that it matters. Zombie, could matter. Naga, it's a 4/6, which pretty good body, 4/6, but it's also got Death Touch. Mm-hmm. It does have exploit, which you can sack her. Like, if you don't have any more creatures, you can play this and sack it, and you get the exploit trigger, which is, when exploits a creature, you may search your library for a card and put it into your hand. So I would say Demonic Tutor, but at this price, it's, it's Diabolic Tutor, but still it's on a 4/6. So, you know, say you've got Gravecrawler, Blood Ghast, Reassembling Skeleton, cards like this, especially Gravecrawler because of the zombie, you know, synergy mm-hmm. there. You know, you play this, sack it, go get your card. Pretty cool. And at 5 mana for a 4/6 Death Touch on top, seems pretty good.
I agree.
I think this card is fairly playable. I think I'm going to try it out once again. It's an excellent card, but, being in black, I think we don't really have too many options. You can see the Legacy Cube kind of went deep on their new rendition. Yep. But it's,
hey, you're laughing. I got there one time. I 3-0'd one time.
I think, I don't know. I think this is an interesting card. The ability is very good, but being for 5 mana, it's okay. I mean, I think it's good, but it doesn't, blow my mind or anything. It's not anything I'm going to do backflips for.
Yeah. There's this interesting, I forgot the, kind of like Carnifage and kind of like, there's another card, like Plague Sliver, Juzum Jinn, but it's is a 3-mana 5/3. It's called Pitiless Horde.
Oh yeah.
But at the beginning of your upkeep, you lose 2 life. Is that a fair rate for a 5/3 in black for 3 mana, or is that just like what Beck wants this? Can you think of a situation?
I think that's a card I have to try because 5 mana for that.
It also has dash for 4 mana.
Yeah. I think I haven't been able to play with the dash mechanic very much. I think this is another card I really have to try because, 5 mana or 5 power is pretty good. That's like obviously 25% of your health. But, I think that's a card I really have to play with. I can't give too much input on, what I think of it in terms of gameplay, but it seems, okay for me. Especially in black, black really needs help, so I think this card just definitely deserves to at least, be tried or given a try in a lot of cubes.
It's almost like black reach because it doesn't have evasion because it's just ground guy, but with the dash mechanic, maybe they got you on a 2-turn clock and they swing in with the team, they pass the turn because you play in black, there's no haste guys in black, and bam, you hit them for 5 with the dash mechanic and then you pull it back to your hand, you don't lose any life. You could win some games like that, steal some games.
Competing in the black 3-drop, I think all of the black 3-drops are a bit different. Like we have, Flesh Carver and the other Ophiomancer. They both serve different purposes. And I think this guy, if you're really pushing an aggro strategy, I think that's where he probably shines the most. He seems pretty sweet.
It is, but like, is this guy ever better? I mean, really? Is he ever better than Lifebane Zombie? Other than the fact that he's
that is a good cast? Point. That's a good point.
I mean, he's easier to cast. He's single black. But, Lifebane Zombie gets a card out of probably a little bit more than 40% of the decks you're playing against. You're going to be able to get a card out of their hand, exile it, and has Intimidate, which I think the evasion's the big deal. I know what you're saying, like with Flesh Carver in the 3-drop slot and a Ophiomancer, like I said, they're not in the same deck, but I think for the aggressive deck, I probably would rather have Herald of Torment with the flying and the option of bestow, and you only lose 1 life turn. Vampire Nighthawk, with all the abilities he has, and then Lifebane Zombie. Still, I'm like you, I kind of want to play with it because of the dash option, but I guess they're just trying to help Black out because it needs it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's not necessarily insanely good, but once again, we're in black. There's not too much going on here, so I think he's definitely a very card. I think it's a card that deserves testing, and I'm going to try him out, and we'll get back to you in the next episode and see how he does.
Trying to think. Of course, we had the Megamorph Cycle in black. We kind of talked about it earlier when we're talking about the white one. Trying to find the name. He Sullengar's Assassin. Yeah, 1 and a black for a 2/1. In creatures with power greater than him, can't block him. That's pretty good evasion. But when you turn him face up, his Megamorph is 3. You get to destroy target creature with power 3 or less an opponent controls. So, definitely pretty good. Not a lot of, really cool black 2 and 3 drops running around. There's a couple, but, this guy's got a lot of value, so. Am I going to try that one?
No. Yeah, I totally agree. Like I said, like I was saying earlier, I think for the the majority of all of the morphs that they've made, even down to what is it, Gurmag Angler? Is that what it's called? Like, are pretty decent cards, and that's And you know, once again, the upside. Sometimes just playing a 2/1 for two is enough to get you, or just to be able to curve out in time is enough to get you there. And I think this guy having, you know, pseudo evasion and removal is pretty solid inclusion. So once again, another card that deserves testing. I'm still not sold on the morph cycle. I'm gonna try them out. Like, they're good cards, but I think a lot of times in higher power leveled cubes, like I have, they tend to do worse. But I will, you know, both the cards, you know, both Hidden Dragon Slayer in white and Silmagar Assassin in black, I think are very strong, and black once again really needs help. So definitely gonna try this guy out.
Still trying to find there's the black fireball. The Damnable Pack, what are your thoughts on it?
Oh, is that the draw spell?
Yeah, it's not really fireball, but can be. Was it black and X?
Double black X.
Yeah, double black X. Target player draws X cards and loses X life. So, you know, sometimes it's a little worse sign in blood, or a fair amount worse sign in blood. Sometimes it's, you know, oh, you're at 5, here's 7 mana, you're dead.
Yeah. So I think it's cool. I'm not sure. I don't know, to be honest. I think this card, it may shine a bit more if you're playing, like, blue-black control and standard and you just want, like, one or two win conditions. I think this card's a perfectly fine win condition. As for cube, I don't know.
It makes all my Pelincron games much better.
There you go.
If I can just find some way to double my mana and can't get anything broken enough, I can just kill them.
Seems decent. We also got new art in Ultimate Price and Duress, and I really like the Ultimate Price, and the Duress is sweet too. The Duress, and Mine Rot. Mine Rot kind of bothered me.
Well, I think the full of that is going to be really creepy looking, so I'm looking forward to that, actually.
It looks pretty disturbing, but yeah. There's also, I think, a couple people have been talking about Minister of Pain.
You know, you're talking about the exploit at the 3-drop, and I think that's it. It's just not as probably good an effect as you wanted, but it's still something.
Yeah, the Minister of Pain costs 2 colorless and a black for a 2/3 with exploit. Once again, comes into play, you can sack a creature, and when Minister of Pain exploits a creature, creatures your opponents control get -1/-1 until end of turn. So, like you were saying, I think this is the card that I was really looking for. It's good. I wish it was -2/-2, but that may have been too strong. I don't know. But once again, black 3-drop slot. I think more recently we've got a lot of utility creatures, and that's why I think the aggro guy we were just talking about, the 5/3, was really good. And this guy seems really interesting. You know, I can see him alongside, once again, Flesh Carver and Ophiomancer. In terms of utility creatures, at least.
Well, another thing, if you could possibly exploit more than one creature, this would be much better. But the fact you basically just get -1/-1, if you sack something. If you could sack 2 things for -2/-2, it just goes way up. But, you know, it's not how the card is, but I think it's okay. It's a 2/3 body for 3 in black, which is, you know, passes the vanilla test a little bit for black anyway.
Mm-hmm. So what else in black is there? Anything I'm missing? There's that zombie lord, the mythic guy. I don't know. For tribal cube, I guess.
I actually like him as far as, like, I think it's a good deal right now because the card's super cheap at mythic. It's a zombie lord, but I don't think it's cube. I mean, it's a 4/3 for 4, can't be blocked. Other zombies
you can't plus.
Oh, he can't block, that's right.
Yeah.
That'd be much better, but he can't block. But you know, but it says you can cast him from your graveyard if you pay 1 more to cast for each other creature card in your graveyard. So in a control deck, he's just a reviable 4 power guy, I suppose.
Yeah.
I don't don't think he's good enough for Cube. However, he's very cheap, so, you know, possibly could be worth something down the road as far as the finance of it goes, but,
yeah, definitely huge casual appeal, and, seems sweet.
And they're trying to make warriors matter in the set. He is a zombie warrior, if that, like you're talking about tribal cube, if you're building a tribal cube, this guy may be for you. He's two very relevant creature types, so.
So let's see if there's anything else here. I really like the new art at a lot of these cards. I think they're pretty sweet.
The ultimate price is...
I really like the ultimate price overall. I think that one is one of the best. That and Evolving Wilds, I think, are really nice.
And I just picked up a FNM Evolving Wilds. But yeah, this art's pretty good. Let me see. But yeah, I think that's probably it in black.
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. Don't good. See much else. So on to red. There's the
Zurgo, of course. Zurgo talked about previously. Excellent guy.
Yeah, like I'll take all my two power one drops in red that don't have severe drawbacks, and this guy doesn't because you know I'm not blocking with him anyway. Mm-hmm. So pretty much auto include. Don't know what I cut for him, but yeah, maybe it's Jackalpuff. You know, I don't see why not.
Mm-hmm.
Other than just the nostalgia factor of Jackalpuff, because pretty sweet card. But yeah, definitely playing Zurgo. What was your next card you really liked in red, or was there one?
I think Rending Volley was really interesting, but not as much for Cube, but more like Modern Constructed, because Combust, I think, is the similar version of it.
Yeah, it's 4 damage, I think, instead of 5, but yeah. It's 1 mana instead of 2, so can't be countered, and it's blue and white creature, so yeah, it's, for the creatures that Combust usually kills, it's better, because you're usually killing Deceiver Exarchs and Pestermite.
And all that good stuff, yeah.
Resto Angel, stuff like that.
Looking now, am I missing something? Commune with Lava is a very interesting card in terms of design space. You know, we've seen this ability, I think, but one of the ones that reminds me, I'll edit this out. One of the more prominent ones is, Chandra Pyromaster. She has a similar ability, and then having that same ability, on a spell that, you know, exile the top X cards of your library for 2 red and an X, you can play them until end of turn.
Oh, to your next turn.
Oh, to your next turn. Oh, wow, that's a lot better. Never mind. This card's actually much better than I thought it was.
Yeah, you could instep this and kind of draw 3 cards for a turn, you know?
Wow, I did not read that. This card is a lot better than I thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, I am going to try this out now.
It makes it much better being able to hold on to them until the end of your next turn. Or not hold on to them, you know, have them available. So, I think you could probably run this in a lot of the burn decks. Or, you know, the big problem with them is you run out of gas. You draw too many lands. Mm-hmm. You know, you say you hit 5 mana with this card, you do it for 3, and, you know, the next draw step, you essentially have 4 new cards in which to do, and, you know, one of the land, maybe so, but, you know, sometimes that's the gas you need to finish somebody off. It's one of those cards you probably have to play with, but I'll probably try it out.
Yeah. I think it's pretty sweet. There's also Dragon Whisperer.
Mythic 2-drop?
Yeah, the Mythic 2-drop costs double red for a 2-2. You can pay 1 red, and he gains flying until end of turn, as well as fire breathing for 1 red and a colorless, so 2 mana fire breathing, which just gets +1/+0. And then he also has Formidable, which costs 4 colorless and 2 red to put a 4/4 dragon creature token with flying onto the battlefield. Activate this ability only if your creatures you control have power 8 or greater. So apart from Formidable, which I think is going to be less relevant in Cube and less relevant in Mono Red, I think this card is pretty solid. I'm not sure immediately how it ranks among Kargan Dragon Lord and, there's one more. I can't think of what it is.
I just said it a while ago. It's the Ashzelt. Yeah, Ashzelt.
Yeah. I'm not sure, you know, of course you could run all three of them, but I'm not sure how they rank among each other, but this guy seems pretty sweet.
I definitely like it. There's some, I've been really happy in my red decks lately when I get Purphoros as part of my top end.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, him being four mana, but if for some reason you get to, you know, turn up Purphoros own and he's a creature, he has, what is it? He's a six power. He's a 6/5.
Yeah, he's a big boy.
Like, just say you have, you know, this and I don't know any other two pips and Purphoros. You've got five. He's turned on. You have to have 8 power. Like, between the Dragon Whisper and Purphoros is 8 just by themselves.
Yeah.
So if you turn Purphoros on, you've got 8 power. Then you make some dragons. So yep. Seems okay. And, you know, worst case, you've got a 2/2 for two that has evasion.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yep.
I think Ember Hauler may have seen his last days in my cube. I like the card, but, you know, we can't all be starters, so he's going to go to the bench for a while for this card.
I think what else here? Lightning Berserker, I've seen a couple people talk about one drop, one with Dash for the same price, but I'm not necessarily sold on it, to be honest.
Yeah, he could be, you know, he could be Fireball, you know, you, I don't know, we're playing with Dash and then pump and kill them. I'm actually a little bit more interested in the Morph, going back to the Morph cycle, Ire Shaman.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, Lightning Berserker's okay, but, I've just got so many good one drops in red.
I agree. I'm just saying what popular opinion
is. Yeah, Ire Shaman, on the other hand, now I was just saying how many red two drops I have, but this one is kind of different. Cause it always can't be blocked except by two or more creatures, which, you know, like a Stormblood Berserker ability. If you Megamorph it, which is only one mana, so you play it face down for three, the next turn you untap, you play one red mana. When you flip it, you exile the top card, or is that Chandra Zero ability.
Mm-hmm.
You can play it until the end of this turn. You know, and then if you flip him, the Megamorph, of course, gets a counter, so it's a 3/2. Getting a card, can't be blocked except by two or more, seems okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. I really like how this was costed. It's very red, obviously. The Megamorph being one red and getting, and him mm-hmm. becoming a 3/2 obviously is very good. Yeah, I think he makes a lot of cubes. I still, you know, every set, I feel like every block we get one of these, and that, you know, we got, Borderland Marauder and, Warname Aspirin, and we have Stormblood Berserker. I'm not sure what the right blend is, and I really like to be able to play with all of them, because I think they're all good mm-hmm. in specific situations. Because they'll have some, you know, unique twist on them. But once again, if you're going in the Morph route, I think this guy is an excellent choice. Very reasonable power level card, and, you know, fulfills the slot that he's supposed to be in very well. Yeah, what are you, just out of curiosity, what two drops are you running? Are you still playing Borderland Marauder?
I am not. That's actually one I never brought in. Mm-hmm. I've still got Gorehouse Chainwalker, who may be coming out, although, you know, my personal crusade for Sigiled Skink as a two drop in red, just cause I love scrying. It's the control player in me. I love scrying and just the random upside that I don't have to draw any more lands or less lands if mm-hmm. I want to. But he may have seen his last day. I don't know. I'm thinking I'm probably going to cut Chainwalker, and I know I'm cutting Ember Hauler for the Whisper, possibly cutting Skink or maybe Generator Servant. I haven't been lucky enough to get one of those sweet turns. We get to just, you know, throw something huge out on turn three and kill them. So,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, my red two drop slot is pretty big. I've got Ash Zealot over real quick. Ash Zealot, Ember Hauler, Generator Servant, Chain Walker, Hellspark Elemental, Dragon Lord, Keld Marauders, Lightning Mauler, Sigiled Skink, Stormblood Berserker, Torch Fiend, Warname Aspirant, Young Pyromancer, and Eidolon the Great Rebel.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, they're really good. They all serve slightly different purposes, but I think there's, you know, the perfect blend of that two-drop slot is really interesting. Yeah, I've been trying to open up my Cube Tutor page this entire time, and I just recently, I uninstalled Google Chrome and then reinstalled it, and all my like browsing and history and bookmark data and passwords are not saved, so I don't remember what my password is for Cube Tutor. But
do you know what your number is?
No. I'm gonna look it up in a second, though. Let's see.
I could pull it up, but there's really. I'm trying to think if there's anything else in red.
Here we go.
There's that. Yeah, there's the dragon. Was it Thunderbreak Regents? If I can find it so I get it right. It's 4 mana 4/4 flyer, which is the dragon. Mm-hmm. And when a dragon you control, not just this one, but any dragon you control becomes a target of spell or ability, it deals, Thunderbreak Regent deals 3 damage to that player. Seems okay. There's definitely stronger dragons, but at 4, not so much. It doesn't have haste, which most dragons do, but still, you know, the fact that if they're trying to remove it, they're going to take a bolt to the face anyway is kind of good. I'm not real sold on it because my red 4 drop is really good. You know, there's so many good red 4 drops. But this one is different than any other one I have because it has flying. None of my other 4 drops in red have flying. So there's that.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think he's pretty sweet. Looking at my cube list right now, finally. I also do not have any flyers for some reason. I'm trying to think. Are there any prominent ones?
Not that I can think of. Most of them are 5, or like Chandra Phoenix at 3, but most of them are 5. I still play Keldon Champion, so I'm probably going to cut it if I give this one a shot. Because, you know, it also has the going to bolt you for 3 no matter what you do. But, of course, Keldon Champion is Echo. But it's haste, so this and that. But I think Thunderbreak Regent may be better, especially if you're going with a lot of dragons, or if you have changelings. Just saying, if you want to activate your Mutavault and they're going to target it, oh by the way, take 3. Mutavault, all the random benefits.
Okay, so I think that's it for red.
There's this really interesting card, the Qualsema Behemoth. It's a 3 mana 5/5, but you have to pay 2 for it to attack or block. It's cool. I'm not going to play it, but you know, just putting it out there. It's a cool card. It's 5/5 for 3.
Yeah. You know. Seems sweet. Ogre Warrior.
Yes. Although it doesn't look like Ogre Warrior.
I don't know what that is.
I mean, it's huge. It looks like it would, it obviously could eat Seed Rhino. 5/5. So, on to green?
On to Verde, on to green. They reprinted Explosive Vegetation, which was really interesting.
Yeah, it's a good card. It's more of an EDH card, but, you know, I wouldn't fault anybody for running it in queue because it's a good ramp card. And the fact they come into play tapped, but you can get any basic land. It's a shuffle effect, which, you know, is worth something. That's the only reprint, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm missing one. Oh, well, of course, Naturalized, but there's a billion Naturalized.
There's a million of those, yeah.
This art is nowhere near the top.
Going into Joy of Cubing's spoiler card, was Aenok Survivalist. And I think this card, actually, of all of them, this was one of the cards that made me want to play Morph. And Aenok Survivalist is 1 green and a colorless for a 2/1 with Megamorph, which is obviously 1 green and 1 colorless. When Aenok Survivalist is turned face up, destroy target artifact or enchantment and opponent controls. So I think if you're playing, Nantuko Vigilante?
Vigilante, yeah.
I don't know. I think pretty much better. Not a strict upgrade, but pretty good. Another Reclamation Sage-like ability I don't think is... I don't think you can run anywhere near amount or near too many of these abilities. I think he's pretty solid. I'm not sure how he ranks again among that enchantment removal, but I think definitely better than a lot of the older ones. And Nantugo Vigilante for sure.
Well, like the... Of course, if you're going to play it as a morph, unmorph it for the effect, they cost the exact same because mm-hmm. they'll be three and then two. The difference is the Vigilante is a 3/3 when you flip it, whereas this one is a 3/2. Mm-hmm. The big benefit is you can play this one for 2 mana as a 2/1, whereas Vigilante is 4 mana for a 3/3. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're the same and different. I like this one better. I like being able to randomly get that 2/1 into play on turn 2. If my opponent goes mountain, 2 power guy, I want to play this guy on turn 2. Whereas Vigilante doesn't give you, you know, you're waiting until turn 3, and sometimes that's too late, you know. Yeah. I want to be able to roadblock them as soon as I can, a lot of times against the aggro deck. So I kind of like this guy better.
Yep. I definitely want to, pick up a copy. If I end up playing him, I want to get, the host of Joy of Cubing, to sign it and send it back to me. We'll see. what else do we got in green here?
One that I'm thinking of, is Collected Company. It's a real sweet card.
Oh, yeah. You can go for it.
Okay, it's a 4 mana instant. It's 3 and a green. You look at the top 6 cards in your library, and you put 2 creature cards with converted mana costs, 3 or less from among them, onto the battlefield, put the rest on the bottom in any order. Of course, you know, you live in the dream is Goyf and whatever, but, I mean, this in, for example, like a Bant shell, mm-hmm. like end of turn, I put in, actually, I'm trying to figure how this works. You can put in, like, say, Goyf and...
Voice of Resurgence is a...
Voice of Resurgence. Card. You could do something like Loxodon, Smiter, Geist of St. Traft.
Oh.
Seems good. that's a lot of beef. You know, a lot of power coming at you.
Man.
You know, even
or even just, value. Like, even like a Imperial Recruiter kind of card or something.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could get, you know...
Which would I... That doesn't make any sense because you just get the card you want. But yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but I mean, you could get like, you know, 2 pretty cheap flyers. You know, Pester Mite and... I don't know, some other 3-mana, 2-mana flyer. And, you know, because... What's the card I'm thinking of that's... Ranger of Eos is 4-mana, you know, but then you gotta go get 1-drops. Whereas this is at instant speed, puts them into play, not into your hand, but you don't get to search your whole deck, you only get to search the top 6. But, you know, if I'm in any kind of aggro or even mid-range deck, I've got a lot of creatures, and a lot of them cost 3 or less. Mm-hmm. So... I think it's a pretty sweet card.
Yeah, or even Brewmaws or something. Like, pretty, just solid, straightforward cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be pretty good. Like, Goyf, that would be like a 4/5, and then like Brewmaws, and then you untap and just bash their face in.
Yep, I agree. I think this... I'm curious to see... Because I think this card is definitely modern playable. I'm not sure, once again, I'm not sure the blend. It could be a Bant, it could be some Zoo variant, but yeah, I know.
So there's some Elf decks, because, you know, it's not quite good enough in Modern, but an Elf deck would want this, because everything that they play besides Critterhoof costs, you know, 3 or less.
Yeah, that'd be pretty sweet as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, let's see, did we talk about the green rare Megamorph?
That Den Protector?
Yeah, that's what it was. Den Protector.
Yeah, the Maternal Witness, as they're calling it.
Turtle, would you like to read Den Protector?
Sure. Let me just get scrolled up here to the top. But it's you know, it's your Megamorph like the other cycle. Where is it here? Okay, yeah, it's a it's 1 and a green for a 2/1, and its little extra feature is creatures with power less than it can't block it. Which is, strictly the reverse of Silumgar Assassin.
Mm-hmm.
When you Megamorph it, you get to, for 1 and a green, you get to turn it, you get to go get target card from your graveyard back to your hand. So the Eternal Witness ability, but you have to turn it face up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's obviously more mana sink than Eternal Witness because you wind up paying a total of 5 mana, but it's spread across 2 turns. And if you do flip it up, it winds up being a 3/2 that can't be blocked by tokens.
Yeah.
So there's definitely playable, and it's a human warrior. So once again, 2 pretty relevant creature types. Seems okay.
Yeah.
Definitely gonna try it out.
I think it's very, very, very reasonable card. Surik the Hunt Caller. 2 colorless and 2 green for a 5/4. And formidable at the beginning of your combat on your turn. If creatures you control have total power 8 or greater, turn creature you control gains haste. How does he rank among the green 4 drops?
The more I read him, the more I think about scenarios, he gets better because generally, like, say you have the opening of, like, say you have the opening of mana guy, you know, any elf, whatever, but, you know, any mana guy in, like, say, Courser, you know, just randomly, or just Eternal Witness on turn 3, whatever. And then into this guy. Well, that's 8 power, so this guy's going to have haste. Like, 90% of the time, unless there's already been a board wipe, this guy's got haste. He's a 5/4 going to hit you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you untap in anything else you play on, you know, instant green. So it could be, you know, 5 mana, 6 mana, anything like that is going to also have haste because you're going to have enough power for it.
Yeah.
You know, 4 mana, 5/4 haste, basically, and then the next turn give something else haste.
Pretty solid.
Yeah, you know, if we look at it, it's not as good as Polukranos, which is a 5/5 with an ability that can wipe the board, But this one is like, you better kill this thing, because if you don't, every creature I play is coming in your face. And like, this into Prime Time is just so gross. This into Thragtusk, I mean, you know, it's like, bash you, you know, you're dead. So you have to have removal for this guy. Just about have to.
Yep, I agree. I think, the thing that, if anything, the thing that discourages me about this card is that it is conditional, as opposed to, once again, like you were saying, Polukranos or Thrun or something around like that, or Master of the Wild
Hunt. Master of the Wild Hunt, yeah.
Yeah, which does it kind of all by itself. But once again, another card that, you know, I would not fault you for playing. It's pretty solid. I always tend to, every time I draft, I always tend to be the deck that gets Wrathed or something, gets left with this conditional card that just doesn't do anything.
like the worst top deck.
Literally every time. But
of course, with you drawn at the turn before, you just kill them. But then they play.
Yep.
That's how we think. Magic players are a lot like poker players. Like we remember the bad beats. Yeah, you know, we can tell you with great detail like how they crushed us when we had every out in the world, and just But yeah, it makes for good stories sometimes. I find that Magic bad beat stories are dramatically more interesting than poker bad beat stories. that may just be me, and I've heard a lot of poker bad beat stories. But anyway, I think this guy's is worth taking a look at. Depending on your 4 drop in green, like I'm still running Felonite Hermit because I like the, you know, sat like. This and was it Deranged Hermit at 5? I like both those cards because it's kind of an army in a can that, I'll just, you know, get all these things. But, I don't know. I'm thinking about cutting that one or maybe Obstinate Baloth because, you know, Red Hate. I'm trying to I've got a lot of Red Hate right now and that's a card I might think about cutting.
Yeah. I think Baloth is pretty fair though. It's not too bad.
It is. Like
as long as you're not playing like Core Firewalker or something like that.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. But yeah,
that's obnoxious. But
yeah, it's like I have to draw my shrine or I die. I guess. but like we're talking about Nantuka Vigilante as a 4 drop, so you cut Vigilante for this and then cut something else for the Dim Protector. You know, maybe your String Root guy isn't getting there, something like that. So it's definitely worth trying. I don't know what you're going to cut for it or if you just add it, but I think Surak's okay. Okay, like. I think about the only green card left worth talking about is the Death Mist Raptor. And it's a really cool card because it comes back kind of, you know, some other green cards do like Vengevine. But let me give you the base stats. It's a 3 mana, 1 and 2 green for a lizard beast, although it's clearly a dinosaur. I mean, it's called Raptor. But it's a 3/3. You can morph it for 3 and megamorph it for 5. So it would be a 4/4. It does have Death Touch, which is a pretty good ability. Whenever a permanent you control is turned face up, you may return it from your graveyard to the battlefield face up or face down. Obviously, the more morphs you have in your cube, the better this card gets. So, it's like, even if you don't have a ton of morphs, it's still a Death Touch 3/3 for 3 that, you know, sometimes you can play face down and then flip it up and ambush somebody's 3/3 with your 4/4, something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. So, I might try it out. It's probably going to be high enough right off the box because it is a mythic that I'm not going to like actively seek them. If I open one, I'll give it a shot though.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think the biggest thing about this guy, like you said, was if you're supporting morph, then this guy gets, you know, the more morphs you have, the better he becomes. So.
Which, you know, you have to think about support. It's like, you wouldn't run this guy with only a couple of morphs. You wouldn't run Brain Freeze without, you know, a lot of support. Mm-hmm. So, you know, same thing. Probably everybody's probably dying because we've been talking about, you know, the solid color. You know, there's some good cards. There are some very good cards, but we've been talking about some so-so cards as well. But let's go into the, you know, the multicolor cards, which are, two very good cycles and two pretty cool planeswalkers. Of the Dragon Lord cycle, they're Elder Dragons, they're back. Are there any of those you're wanting to try out or want to talk about?
Yeah, we can, I think the one that I find the most interesting, well, there's two. The first one is Dragon Lord, Silumgar. For 4 colorless, a blue and a black, you get a 3/5 with flying and death touch, and when he enters the battlefield, you can gain control of target creature or planeswalker for as long as you control him. So, kind of sore of temptation, kind of not. He's sweet. I mean, he's awesome. I think, once again, one of the problems with the dragons is that I think a lot of people are immediately turned off, including myself, of seeing creatures being, you know, 4 or 5, or not 4, but 6, 5, 6, 7 mana. You know, a lot of times it's just kind of like weird EDH cards or, you know, cards that aren't necessarily very good. But I think, for the most part, the dragons are pretty solid. The only problem is the higher power level of your cube, I think the worse these cards are, because not only are they going to be a little bit less impactful, or maybe even more impactful depending on what they're doing, like for this case, if you're stealing a Karn kind of thing, it's probably a lot better. But, you know, like, for example, I mean, there are times you just may be dead, or like, I don't know.
I definitely understand what you're saying about that, you know, because, yeah, it's okay to have these huge bombs in your deck, but when they cost this much, they really need to do something, you know, that almost wins you the game.
Yeah.
With that in mind, I forget if it might have been the Magic Box podcast when they're talking about some of these cards,
mm-hmm.
but when you think about Silumgar, like, I think I originally thought Sower of Temptation, but when it says Planeswalker, you need to really think Zealous Conscripts.
That's true.
So it's like a getcha card. Like, you let them level up their Planeswalker. It needs to be one that, you know, they're actively going for the ultimate, you know, not something where they're minus plus, mm-hmm. you know, just getting a bunch of value out of you. That's going to kill you. But when it's the guys that, like, the Tameos or the, maybe even the Elspeth, the big Elspeth.
Yeah.
Yeah, something where they're trying to get the emblem, you know, the ultimate for the emblem, and you let them kick it up where it's at that level, and then you play this. I'm pretty sure when you steal it, I believe you can attain priority to activate it. I'm not, because I know, like, if you play a Planeswalker, you normally, when you play a Planeswalker in your turn, you have priority to activate it. As long as you don't go to do anything else, you can activate it before they can try and kill it or remove it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure if that's how this card's going to work. Like, once you get control of it, if you're able to activate it on your main phase,
I think that is the case. I don't think you can, because it's a trigger, and then the trigger would resolve, and then you would gain priority, or you would gain control of the card, and I think then you just have priority at that point. I'm pretty sure.
I know you can't, like, activate them at instant speed, but I'm pretty sure on your main phase, your first main phase, if you don't do anything else, you can activate your Planeswalker. I know right after you cast it, so
yeah.
I've talked to my judge friends about that. Either way, it's a pretty cool card. You steal their Planeswalker, you ultimate it, and they're just like, they're so sad.
Yeah,
so you should probably win most games if you get to do that. And, you know, it's a 3-5 flying Death Touch, which is not really bad. It's a pretty good card as far as that goes. I do like, on just the base stats and abilities, the other Silumgar is better because it's hexproof.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this one then would take, you know, like I said, take their Karn, take their, you know, Venzer and get this emblem where you just blow them out. It's pretty good. So it's definitely more Zealous Conscripts than Sower of Temptation in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. The next dragon that I really like, but I don't think, unfortunately, is going to make it, is Dragon Lord Atarka. That's 5 colorless, a green and a red. For a flying, for an 8/8 with flying and trample. Pardon me, with flying and trample. And when he attacks, or when he enters the battlefield, you deal 5 damage divided as you choose to any number of target creatures or planeswalkers your opponents control. So I'm pretty sure if this guy lands, you win the game. The only problem, once again, is he costs 7 mana. But, you know, an 8/8 flyer with trample is pretty hard to deal with. I don't think there's any way you're going to get rid of this guy. I don't know. But, once again, 7 mana really kind of sets it off to the point. Like, I think in, like, for myself, once again, if you're in a higher power level, if you're playing a higher power level cube, a lot of times turn 7, you just don't have a turn 7. And even if you're ramping, playing this guy on turn 5 or 6 sometimes still isn't even enough. But no, I think from raw stats, he's probably one of the better ones, I think, that in terms of raw power, it's just going to kill you. You're just dead.
I mean, I can't disagree with anything you said. He's so big. 8/8 trample flying. That's just huge. But, you know, you got the semi-Begarden Hellkite effect dealing 5 damage, but you can't go to the face. You can go planeswalkers. You can go creatures. The big thing is it is an enter the battlefield ability. So, I mean, like, you know, I play Sundering Titan, which, granted, you can tinker it out or, like, say, Goblin Welder it in. But, you know, this is a green creature. So you've got things like Natural Order. You've got Green Sun Zenith.
Very true.
You know, it's a really good Tooth and Nail target, you know? So it's, I wouldn't fault you for trying it out, really. It's that strong, like you said. Now, if you're going to hard cast it, good luck to you getting that far and then, you know, playing it and it not dying. But, like, you know, if you can, you know, recurring Nightmare this thing or, like I said, Natural Order it on, like, turn 3, that's pretty big game. So, the more I read it, the more I like it, to be honest. It's one of the 2 or 3 I'm considering to play.
Yeah.
But because it's a green creature, I think if this was the, Culligan, like say if you switch the 2 abilities for the black or red one, it becomes strictly worse because you lose like 2 or 3 easier ways to get it out.
Yeah. That is a good point. I do actually like that you brought that up. Natural Order, Green Sun, Zenith, or Genesis Wave, or something, you know, crazy big, makes this card a lot better. That is a very good point.
I think the only other one that most people are considering is Dragon Lord Ojutai.
Mm-hmm.
Because one, he's the cheapest of the bunch. He's 5 mana. He's 3, a white and a blue, for a 5/4. And the key thing is this is more of a, your tap out blue or blue white control decks. I guess is that a thing? You know, your tap out control decks where, you know, you're not holding mana all the time. You're just like playing stuff, drawing cards, dealing with their threats, board wipe, stuff like that. So, you know, you go board wipe into this thing and it has hexproof as long as it's untapped. So once you play it, like they can't remove it without, you know, stack effect, mass removal, something like that while it's sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to untap with it most of the time, and then whenever he deals combat damage, you get to look at the top 3 cards of your library, put 1 into your hand, and the rest on the bottom. So you get to anticipate. It's almost like Impulse, but not as good. But, you know, and hopefully if you're in this kind of control deck, once you get to untap and you have your mana up, you know, you get to attack with him, then he loses hexproof, but, you know, you've got counter spells, you know.
Yeah.
You should, you know, you're in blue.
Hopefully, so, hopefully. Unless, you know, yeah. If you don't, you're not doing it right, so.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, he protects himself with his hexproof while untapped. And he has a really good ability if you ever land with him. So,
yeah.
I think this is what, gosh, that Sphinx from the Theros? What am I thinking of?
Prognostic Sphinx.
This is what that card wanted to be. Like that one, yes, you could tap it at any time and give it hexproof, but, you know, you usually missed out on a combat phase.
Yeah.
And you had to discard a card as well.
He was really close, but I think the fact that he came back tapped was the,
Or you had to tap him to do it.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Also, he was only, I think, what, 3 power, whereas this guy's a 5/4, you know, chunks of life at a time. And like you said, they can't remove him once you cast him with targeted removal, as long as he's untapped. So, and you know, what if you, there are ways to give things vigilance. So, you know, you could just find some way to give this guy vigilance and just crash in all the time.
Yep.
Are you thinking or considering Kolaghan or Dromoka at all?
I'm not really, to be honest. I think Dromoka, unfortunately falls into the category of very, very, of a very, very strong green white. You know, I think, you're playing cards like Sigarda, you're playing cards like, he's competing with cards like Sigarda, and even, you know, I don't know how many green white slots you have, but green white is really strong, and I just don't think he does enough. Kolaghan, I honestly have not read. Flying haste for 6. So the creature takes all of haste. Whenever a creature, your opponent casts a creature or a planeswalker, name a card in his.
That's flavor text.
Yeah.
It's actual flavor text in Cube. Or EDX, for that matter.
No, wait, well, whenever a player casts a creature spell or planeswalker spell with this. Oh, yeah, with the same name.
It's relevant in standard, I guess. Or modern, but. Yeah, in singleton format's not very relevant, but it, you know, giving your creatures haste, pretty good. It has haste, 6 power.
It's not bad, yeah.
It's not bad, but like I said, it's.
It doesn't, you know, do enough for me.
There's plenty of red dragons at 5 that do more, this or more, you know. So I don't think for a dragon that's red, has red mana, that this is what you want to go with.
But, staying on topic of red black, can jump into the commands here. Kolaghan's command, on the other hand, I think is one of the best cards on the entire set.
Definitely. I think just all around, you know, cube, just regular constructed, it's just a good card. I think it's one of those, it's never going to be outstanding, but it's always, you're always going to get something good. You're always going to 2-for-1 them.
Yep.
And it's so versatile. And I think the decks that can run this are going to always, it's always going to make your deck if you're running black red.
Yeah, the only criticisms of this are like, if it could be better, but that's like that, the way that it is perfectly good. Like the only criticisms would be like, if this would be a Thoughtseize or something, but that's just, it's too much.
Yeah. Well, it's instant speed discard. You just don't get to pick, but
yeah.
Well, like, I saw the, a tweet from, was it Morrow or Fourth Side, but it was like, is creatures that would be better with flash, and it was like Boros Reckoner, Thrag Tusk, and it said, "Oh yeah, all creatures would be better with flash." So this could be better, but it's a pretty good card. It's a pretty balanced card.
Yeah, it's a very balanced card. I think once again, there's never a point in which this card is bad, to say the least.
Like worst case, they discard, you shock them or shock their creature. Yeah. I think that's probably the bottom barrel. I mean, just strictly, that's like the worst this card ever is for 3 mana at instant speed, which is pretty good.
Yeah. So, yeah, definite try. What other commands were you impressed with?
Honestly, they're all pretty good. Now, for cube, a Tarkus command is probably the weakest because, I mean, it's two of its main modes are like the skull crack, like your opponent can't gain life. Deal 3 damage to the face. Mm-hmm. Putting a land into play at instant speed, okay. I guess if you had a bunch of landfall, that's a thing. I think it's kind of a plant for the next set. I think landfall's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Battle for Zendikar. And then the other mode is creatures you control get +1/+1 and gain reach, which I guess could be a blowout. But once again, I don't like that one as much for cube. My favorite right now is probably Ojitai's Command.
Mm-hmm.
And it's obviously not as good as Cryptic Command, but what is.
Mm-hmm.
But it does things like this, like Culligan's Command. We say the worst it is instant speed. They discard a random card, or not a random card, but discard a card, and you shock something. This is, at worst case, dismiss, which I run.
Would you like to read it off?
Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead. But it's Ojitai's Command is 4 mana, 2 white-blue, so generally easier to cast than Cryptic Command. And you choose two. The top one is return target creature card with converted mana cost 2 or less from your graveyard to your battlefield. Gain 4 life, counter target creature spell, and draw a card. So, I mean, a lot of times Cryptic Command is counter your bomb, creature, draw a card.
Yep.
So this has got that. You can't bounce things, can't tap the guys down, but like I said, it's more, I think it's also a little bit more flexible because gaining 4 life is sometimes all you need to do against the red deck.
You'd be surprised. I was going to say, you'd be so surprised how much, like how big of a deal gaining 4 life can actually be.
So. And, you know, sometimes you might be gaining more than 4 life, you know, quotations, because you're returning this 2/3 or a 2/2 from the graveyard to the battlefield to trade with their 2/2. So you're gaining 2 life there, killing their guy technically, and gaining 4 more life. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's pretty good. I'm definitely going to, now the only thing is my Azorius section is really stacked. So
yeah, Azorius is really strong.
Just gonna add something, because right now it's only got 6 cards in it, and some of my sections have as much, meaning as 8. So I think I'm just gonna add this and maybe Ojitai and just call it a day. there's nothing in my Azorius section I want to cut.
No, you can't. Geist is, I think, uncuttable in cube.
Yeah.
Card is too good. But yeah, no, I once again, I think all of the commands are very good. I think Culligan's Command is by far the best. And I think it's probably top 3 cards of the set. But yeah, I'm not sure, like once again, green white, Dromoka's Command is fine. It's not terrible, it's not great, but you know, for the most part they all have very, very good value. But yeah, a lot of like, once again, green-white falls short because green-white is so strong. Like, I think Voice of Resurgence and, you know, Knight of the Reliquary are very, very good cards. And they're just competing. And once again, like you said, Ojitai's Command, blue-white is a very, very strong color combination. Geist of St. Traft, Supreme Verdict, Sphinx's Revelation. If you're playing any Venusaur's, if you're playing D-Spheres, if you're playing, you know, any of those cards, this card is very good. Or those cards are very good, and Ojitai's Command is not bad, but does it really match up when you're comparing them? So that's kind of the decision I think most cubes will have to make, because across the board, I mean, even in a Tarkus Command, sometimes that extra land is enough for you to ramp into a, you know, a turn earlier in prime time or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And, of course, the only one we didn't cover so far was the Silgar's Command, which is the most powerful, but it's the most expensive because it costs 5,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, kind of hurts it being it's 3 blue-black. But if you think about it, this one is always a 2-for-1. Mm-hmm. Like, just is. It's counter target non-creature spell you choose to, return target permanent to its owner's hand. So, you know, boomerang effect. Target creature gets -3/-3 until end of turn. And destroy target planeswalker.
That's gnarly.
Yeah, now there's not many cards that say that. There might be 7 in all of Magic. So, maybe 6 or 7 tops. I don't know, like this one, like I said, it costs more, but this is more of a late game card, I think, because, you know, usually like they're playing their 4 or 5 mana planeswalker, or say they're, you know, this in a blue-black control deck, just randomly, they're getting ready for the winning swing, and you just bounce their biggest guy and kill their 3/3.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like, they almost can't win, maybe. It costs 5, but it kind of has to, because it's really strong. But, you know, but I'm lucky. I think they're all pretty good. Green-white getting the short end of the stick, because green-white's so strong. And red-green is kind of weaker, but, like, it's pretty cheap, so, you know.
Yep.
So, that said, we can get into... is there anything else in the multicolor that you wanted to talk about other than the Planeswalkers?
I don't believe so. There's a rare and uncommon dragon cycle, but they're just... You know, unless you're going for a ton of dragons in your cube, I don't think you really need to look at them.
Yeah. So, going into the final two cards of the entire set, we have Narset Transcendent. So, blue-white Planeswalker, two colorless, a white and a blue, for a 6 loyalty Planeswalker. She has a +1. Look at the top card of your library. If it is a non-creature, non-land card, you may reveal it and put it into your hand. -2. When you cast your next instant or sorcery spell from your hand this turn, that was very choppy for some reason, it gains rebound. And her -9 is you get an emblem with your opponents can't cast non-creature spells. So... 6 loyalty on a Planeswalker that costs 4. Immediately goes up to 7. Ulties in 3 turns. Ulties on her 4th turn, like most Planeswalkers do. I think she's pretty good. You know, Once again, it's another card I have to play with. Like, she definitely fits into blue-white. She feels very blue-white. She's not a card you're probably going to be playing in the same deck that plays Geist of St. Traft or something like that. But she's solid. I don't know. I think she's pretty solid. What do you think about her?
Like I said, you know, there's like some of the Geist of St. Traft decks. Usually I run those. They're like, you know, splashing red or splashing green. Mm-hmm. Have quite a few creatures, you know, 10 to 15. Whereas my blue white decks, strictly blue white decks, are usually 3-4 creatures, maybe 6. So, you know, you're running anywhere from 18 to 20 non-creature spells. So her plus ability says half the time you're drawing a card, which is probably stronger than Domri Rod's, you know, plus.
Yeah.
The ratio is probably higher in the deck that plays this. And then going immediately up to 7 loyalty, they're not going to be able to kill it on the next turn, most likely, without like a remove target Planeswalker spell. The -2 is really sweet. Of course, you can think of the magical Christmas land scenarios like, recall. Oof. Rebound it. Time walk, or even the non-power stuff like treasure cruise. Okay. Or like you cast a board, like you play her the next turn, you cast a board wipe. Well, they have to basically take the next turn off their creature deck because they can't play creatures into upcoming board wipes, so they just have to take the turn off. It's kind of like when you have consuming vapors and they've got one creature, like, well, they can't play another creature because it's just going to die. It's the same thing, only you get, you know, a wider variety of picking what you want your rebound to be. It could be, can you imagine Cryptic Command with rebound?
Oof.
Like, draw a card.
Wait, so down. When you draw recast card, Cryptic Command, do you have to use the same modes? I don't think so. Because there's some, isn't there something weird about that?
When it rebounds, it's like it's a new copy of the spell, but I think you get to cast it however, I think you get to choose it however you want.
There's something weird about that. I don't remember what it is, but I think it's, I don't know.
I want to say like there's something like this fork, like say if you were to fork a Cryptic Command, it copies that spell that's on the stack.
Oh, okay.
So you'd have to be the same mode, I think. I'm not a judge, but I think I've had that happen. But like on rebound, like the card gets cast again and it goes down like choose two and you choose two.
Yeah.
You know, if we're wrong about that, that's one thing, but I mean, okay, fine. So
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Same two modes.
Yeah. Oh no, yeah.
Like cast your name again, draw a card. Like the only thing it doesn't work on is counter target spell.
Yeah.
But, she's pretty good. Now, the emblem might not always be very, very important. You might not ever ultimate against some decks, but I don't know. It just looks like it's good value and it's in blue white. It's a very controlling card. I like it.
Yep. I agree. Would you like to read, the second Planeswalker out of the set?
Yes. My long awaited teamer card. I'm going to throw in the cube as soon as I get one. Sarkhan Unbroken. He's 5 mana. Two colorless, green, blue, red. He starts off with 4 loyalty. And he's got a really good plus one ability because it says my favorite three words, draw a card. plus one is draw a card, then add one mana of any color to your mana pool. So, you know, he automatically replaces himself. You know, if you're not tapped out, you could possibly play something else that turn. Once you untap with him, that's pretty good ramping and fixing and drawing cards. His minus two, which is, you know, you'll do a lot of times to protect him. Minus two is put a 4/4 red dragon creature token with flying onto the battlefield. So he just makes dragons. Seems good. You know, if they don't, you know, kill him, if they don't interact with him in any way, his worst case is make 2/4s.
Yep.
Across two turns. So seems pretty good. His minus eight is almost flavor text and cute. His minus eight is search your library for any number of dragon creature cards and put them onto the battlefield, shuffle your library. So, you know, he's very strong on his first two abilities. His minus is probably never going to do anything. Unless you have a lot of, you know,
dragon
changelings and dragons, you know. So, don't sleep on the changelings. You know, your
chameleon
mirror entity and your chameleon colossus get there.
Yep.
But, I mean, it says draw a card for a plus ability, so I'm on board right there.
You cannot be happier yet. I think, I think Narset and Sarkhan are pretty, pretty solid. I think Narset is maybe a bit better just because she's not three colors and more people are going to be trying her. But, you know, if you're playing, if you're devoting some slots in your cube to the three color, or to three color cards, I think Sarkhan is a very legitimate contestant in that position.
Well, and yeah, he's three colors, but one of the colors is green.
Yeah, there
and
you go.
He's a five drop. So in most of my green decks that want to cast three color spells on turn five, they usually can.
Yeah.
But yeah,
draft a bird, you know, and Sylvan carried it, and you'll be fine.
Yeah, maybe a little rampant growth or far seek. You know,
And his minus reminds me a lot of Obnixilis, from the commander decks, and I haven't played him at all, but you know, this is very serious ability to be putting a 4/4 dragon into play. That's something you have to deal with, and there's still a planeswalker on board. It's a sweet card.
Yeah, he's definitely one of those with Elspeth Tyrell type planeswalkers. Like, you're going to plus it, you're going to minus it. You're going to plus it, you're going to minus it.
Yeah.
You know, of course, like I said, I'll just plus this thing all day long. I'm fine with my own personal Howling Mind. And ramps me.
Yeah. You know,
but, so how do you feel overall about the set?
I think it's sweet. You know, the slam includes for me, looking back now that we've kind of gone over everything, so far have been Dragon Hunter, the 2/1/1, in white, Kogan's Command, I think Stratus Dancer and Narset are both very, very good cards, as well as, you know, many other stuff, I think.
Zergo.
I'm sorry. I don't know why I did not write Zergo down. But yeah, Zergo is, of course, slam included. And it was pretty solid. Like, I'm always really disappointed in spoilers sometimes because they'll show a rare cycle and I'll be like, oh, great. Or a mythic cycle. Oh, great. Now I have seven, you know, we have six useless mythic slots in the next set because they're all going to be seven mana crap cards. But, you know, I'm actually very content with this. I was really happy because I think we aim to get between 3 to 5 cards out of a cube set, and sometimes we don't even get that. And this set we got a good 5 or 6, maybe even 8.
Yeah, I think after we went over them, there's at least 5 I really want to try. And 2 or 3 that are like I want to play with to see how they work.
Yeah.
It's probably been since, like, no lie, like, probably Ravnica Block I was kind of this happy with.
Mm-hmm.
The most recent Return to Ravnica Block, not original Ravnica. of course that was on a couple of sets ago, but like, say, Theros Block was just like, eh. I think this block's probably better than Theros Block for kids.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, and not just the new cards, but I think the reprints were just a lot better, of course. I mean, just fixing mana bases like in fetch lands have been so big for every format of Magic, and I don't think there's anything that they could have done better
to, you know, sustain the game was to reprint fetch lands, and having those in the original, in the first set, was so big, because even now, with cons being open so much as it was, fetch lands are like less than $10. You can get a Polluted Delta for like $11 and all of the other ones for like $8 or $9. Bloodstained Mire is like at $5 or $6. So, and this is, you know, a couple months ago, these were $60, $70, $80 cards.
Yeah, and then also they finished out the trial end cycle.
Yep.
You know, so I know a lot of cubes are running the whole 10 cycle now because they finished it. So, yeah, so pretty excited about Magic Origins coming out. Then, of course, Modern Masters 2015. Of course, that's an all reprint set. But, yeah, Origins, I'm pretty pumped about that coming up.
But best card in the block, or top three cards in the block.
Top three cards in the block. I'm going to have to go Ugin. God, so many. I'm going to have to go Ugin, Clever Impersonator.
I like Sarkhan. I like Sarkhan a lot, too.
The first one or this one?
The red one.
The red one, yeah.
I think he's close. I don't know if he's three, but I think he's top five.
Yeah. I would probably go Ugin, Clever Impersonator, and probably Dictor Time, just because the decks I like to play, those all three go in the decks I like to play.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I like Islands, but, you know, like, there's all the other colors had stuff, like, that was very strong on this block. But, yeah, those are, and like you said, the Sarkhan is very good, and... I don't know. Like I said, it's surprising how many good cards came out of this block.
Yeah, I think Ugin now, you know, and I remember when Ugin was first released, it's like, oh, this guy is pretty good. After playing with him, because I haven't been able to play with him in my personal cube yet, just because I haven't drafted in so long. But playing against him online, you just do not beat that card. It's so good.
Go ahead. Like I got a funny story. You know, the Moto Cube's going right now.
Mm.
I actually beat an Ugin that got ultimated.
Wow.
Because I decked him. You know, he draws seven and put him in. He, like, almost whiffed, you know. He just puts a bunch of stuff into play, a couple creatures. I was like, and he put his Ugin down to, like, one when he did it. And I was like, damnation? And, you know, I had some way of killing his, killing Ugin. And then the next turn... Damnation, and the next turn I think I had Hero's Downfall. So, like, every permanent he put in play was a land or creature, so I killed all the creatures. Next turn I killed his Ugin, and then I wound up targeting him with a draw spell. So,
oh, man.
But Ugin is not to be trifled with. Normally he just wins the game, like, automatically. Like, you're gonna get, like, a 5-for-1 if you, like, minus... you know, for him or something.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to snag my promo Ugin, I think, at $80 a couple weeks ago off of TCG Player, and I cannot be happier because that card is like $160 now or something. Looking at TCG, they're like $160. Why? I don't know, but...
It's just the a demand thing. It's just... I guess everybody's... One, a lot of people really... The art's better, first of all.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like fulls. I like fulls in my cube, but the art's just better over... I'd rather have that over a full pack one, yeah. I think. But then you've also got all the people that don't want to miss out, because if this is, like, the next, like, Book Jace, it's just absurd and you can't find them.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, it pretty much is. The Book Jace is, what, like, $200, and this is $150. And I think, once again, the different art is so, so huge. But speaking of promos, today we got... Today they announced the new Judge promos, which I think appeals to a bunch of people. We got Damnation back in a Judge promo. Exciting. To be honest, am a little disappointed that it was not in Modern Masters 2. I still hope it is.
Highly unlikely now.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. I think it, you know, more copies is better out there for everyone. I think Judge foils don't really do much to supply the demand, to be honest, because they hold such a high premium most of the time that it doesn't really do anything for the price. But those are sweet. We also got Felden of the First Path, or is that what it's called? Third Path. And Dual Caster Mage from the Commander decks. I'm going to pick up a dual caster at some point in time. I still love that card in Cube. It's excellent. And, of course, the big one, which everyone – well, the two big ones everyone's talking about. The first one is Wasteland. New art from the vintage what is that from? Is that from
– I think there's a Tempest Remastered.
Tempest
Remastered. Yeah, they're going to have new art on that, on Magic Online, and that's the art they're using for this.
Yeah, and that's pretty cool to see that. And I actually saw Eric Klug did an alter so long ago, I don't remember what it was, of that art. I personally like the old one better. I like the old media promo or whatever it is, the old school foil version. I still don't have one, but I'll pick one up at some point in time. and, of course, the big, big one, Ravages of War. What do you think about Ravages of War as a reprint?
Oh, so happy. Like, I was so mad when they reprinted Armageddon. I've ranted about this on multiple videos, podcasts, whatever. But like, they reprinted Armageddon for like the 18th time and from the vault. And yes, they gave us two portal cards. They gave us Rolling Earthquake and
Burning of
Zinyi. Thanks. But give me a Ravages of War, please. And like, I was like, they reprinted Armageddon. But they finally gave us one. It's the first time you get it in full. First time in Black Border, and it's going to probably be really expensive, but I'm getting one. Like, I really want one. I've wanted one for years, and the Portal one is just so expensive.
Yeah, I'm looking right now on TCG Player. Oh, they dropped. Holy cow. On Ravages of War on TCG are at $350.
Yeah, I think it was up over, what, five for a little while?
They were... after From the Vault came out, there were very few in circulation, and they were pushing over $1,000. There was just none. Nobody wanted to get rid of them. And you can look on TCG, the TCG mid at certain points in time was 2,400, low of 800, and median was 4,000. That's just ridiculous. But yeah, they had settled.
Get over, I think, on that at one point.
But, they had settled between $400 to $700. For the longest time, and now they have just pancaked down. I'm hoping, I still think this card's probably going to be around like $200 or $300, but hopefully with the Judge promos, and we were talking before the show, there are probably 10 times the amount of Judge promos that there are of original print Portal 3 Kingdoms Ravages of War, so that's cool.
Yeah, English ones especially.
Yeah. So yeah,
there's not a lot of English Portal 3 like out there at all, and then you know, some get destroyed or lost or unplayable. So, yeah, definitely excited about the Ravages. Like I said, I've already talked to one of my best Judge friends, and he's been told that if he keeps it for himself, I won't fault him. If he trades or sells it to anybody else, he's dead to me. So, we're gonna figure out like whatever the going price is, and I'm gonna get one from him. So yeah, because I've wanted that card in my cube for a long time.
Yeah.
And at the price it was at, like you could almost get power at that point. So yeah, it makes sense.
It was too much. I want to take a quick moment here to talk about the Judge promo Force of Will. You know, this is a really interesting card because obviously Force of Will is top 10 cards ever printed, I think. I think better than like Mox Pearl, Mox Ruby. Force of Will, I think, is maybe the top three blue cards ever printed, top four blue cards ever printed. Holds an entire format together, is an amazing card. Just peaked over $100 this year. You know, it goes up and down throughout the seasons. And the Judge foil was very similar to Ravages of War, although... Well, so the Judge foil is now the same price that the Ravages of War was before the reprint, and I'm curious to see the future of this card's value, because I believe if they continue to put them out, because what they were saying at the initial, you know, whatever, the initial release or the initial, like, distribution of it, that it was a Judge, you know, Judge rewards event and a release, and I'm curious if they're going to be doing this more often. And if Force of Will will get reprinted again. If not, you know, where is this card going to fall on the MTG Finance side? Because there are there's definitely a market for foil Force of Wills in every format. But yeah, I don't know. The Ravages of War promo reminded me of Force of Will. And even though Force of Will has a little bit more than just the casual appeal and stuff of that, or like the casual appeal of a lot of the Judge promos, I'm curious to see if the Judge promo Ravages of War will end up creating a premium from where the Ravages of War are at now, or they're just going to completely tank in value. So I don't know. Interesting. Just food for thought.
It's probably more on the, not tank, but it should be cheaper just because, you know, the reason the Force of Will, there's more regular ones out there, obviously, but also it's played more. It's like the decks that play it want four.
Yeah.
Generally, Ravages is just a cube or EDH card. So, but yeah, like I'm so excited that there's more, there's going to be more of them out there. So that's big news.
Yep.
Okay. And our, last topic for tonight, which probably deserves its own episode, but continue to talk about this as episodes go on, is sleeves and storage. Now, this, once again, is huge in the MTG Cube community. We have forums. We have people who sell these for a living. We have all kinds of crazy options when it's coming to sleeving your cube. You know, if you're sleeving 1,000 cards, which sleeves are the best, you know? Which case, you know, I'm holding, if my cube is valued at $50,000, I want it to be protected. You know, I want to be able to put it down or put it in my house knowing that it's safe, knowing that if it falls over, none of my cards are going to be damaged. So, you know, what is your experience with cube storage and sleeves?
Well, I originally sleeved my cube with some Legion sleeves that I had that I had started acquiring when I first started playing, but I didn't like how they shuffled. So I switched over to other sleeves, but I still had all these Legion sleeves left of the same color. So when I built a cube, I was like, well, I can put these in this because, you know, I don't shuffle that much. Sure. Well, then as I got a little bit more into the cube, it got more valuable. I was like, I need better sleeves. And I picked up some from Limited Resources. And they're a lot better. I think they're actually still made by Legion, but it's their higher grade, I guess, and they shuffle much better. They don't break as often. But I mean, if you're going into like the higher end sleeves, of course you got your KMC, your Pro Mats, or Hyper Mats, I'm sorry.
Hyper Mats, yeah.
I think that's that or like maybe Dragon Shields, but for me, the Hyper Mats are about the best you can get.
Yeah.
But they're quite expensive. But
yeah, I like Hyper Mats and the normal mat KMCs. For me, the one reason I kind of am a bit different than most people is if you look at the height of a Hyper Mat compared to a normal mat sleeve, it's actually a little shorter. And the only thing that bothers me about it is I double sleeve my entire cube. So what happens is when you double sleeve a card in the Hyper Mat sleeve, the tops begin to open because there's like obviously there's more width. But in terms of feel, I don't think there's a better sleeve on the entire market than Hyper Mat sleeves. They're so comfortable. They're so nice to shuffle. I've never had one crack. I use them for drafting all of the time. They're just thoroughly amazing. But, I really, really like KMC. Dragon Shield, I've had problems with miscut issues where like I'll buy two or three and they'll be slightly different sizes.
Like you two boxes like side by side in the same shop, and there's a couple that just aren't the same.
Yeah, and that annoys me, but that's just me being petty at that point. But yeah, for the most part, I mean, I think most people at this point are pretty knowledgeable in what sleeves. Like, I don't encourage using Ultra Pro products probably in general, but their sleeves are pretty bad. Like, I wouldn't really want to be sleeving hundreds of dollars of cards in these really cheap sleeves that break very often. But, if you're going to do it right.
Yeah, like, I'm probably easier on cards than just about anybody because I don't riffle shuffle mine at all.
Yeah, me neither.
Ever. But, like, and I have had some Ultra Pros break, and if I have them break, then they'll break. I'll use them, like, for EDH decks that I don't use that often. And occasionally like a standard deck, or draft decks, stuff like that. But yeah, for a cube or even a really expensive EDH deck, or Legacy, you want to make sure you have the good ones and
don't cheap out
the KMCs.
Even if your cards aren't very expensive, don't cheap out.
Well, and like I say, I double sleeve my entire cube, and that's the one good thing I did like about the limited resource ones. They fit the KMC, the perfect size ones.
Mm-hmm.
They fit them very well, and that was a big plus for me. Because like I said, sometimes if they don't match up just right, it causes issues. But you definitely want to protect your investment. That's really big.
Yeah. And then
what do you store your cube in, like the actual box? Like
mine at the moment is actually not in a box. I've been wanting to buy I've been thinking of this name the entire time we've been talking about this topic, Cube Vault.
Cube Vault, yes.
Yeah. I've been wanting to buy a Cube Vault for the longest time. Right now, they're just in a binder. I haven't been able to play. I was using a normal, the white paper or the white column cardboard box garbage for a long time. But I want to be able, there's some options, and I've been really looking into them. The two premium ones, I think, if you're really into Cube and you really want to safeguard your investment, you can use, of course, any wood box that you can have tailored made for you. There are, people use wine boxes. People use, what is it? Felt, not written, but felt crafted boxes and stuff like that. Those are excellent.
Yeah,
but
felt lining, yeah.
Yeah, but the only problem with that is a lot of times they're not obviously meant for magic cards, so they may not be the correct size. But from what I've, the options that I've looked at in terms of cube storage are between two. There's Aaron Kane's wood boxes. He has a YouTube channel. You can look him up, Aaron Kane. This is just a shout out to him because I think he makes excellent products, not just cube boxes, but deck boxes for EDH or deck boxes just for whatever. He has columns or column boxes that are very, very high quality. They lock. They have, felt in them. You can get them designed for any type, wood, any kind of stain, whatever it is. And then also Cube Vault, which Cube Vault, I think, in terms of protection is probably a bit better because it's made out of, it basically looks like it's made out of steel. Like I want to get one and just do a torture test and put it on YouTube, just like throwing it on the ground and seeing what happens. it really looks really nice it's and it has fair. A lock on it. The handle is a little iffy if I have any criticism of it, but it looks really, really good. I want to pick one up. I was hoping to get a free one off of Cubism, the podcast, but my story was not chosen, unfortunately.
Sad face.
But yeah, Cube Vault is an excellent, excellent thing.
Yeah, I actually reached out to the creators or owners of Cube Vault or whatever, and they've got, it's pretty customizable. I think they start around like 120-ish.
Yeah,
that's right. But you can spend more if you want, obviously. But other than that, the only other cheaper, like I said, the Aaron Kane, I think those actually go for more, at least 100, I believe.
Yeah, I think they're 180. To be honest, I think they're almost upwards of $200 for a lot of the bigger boxes.
Yeah. Anything cheaper than 100, Ultra Pro does put out one that it looks good. I haven't actually seen one opened up and felt of it. But it will hold, it's, I think, CUB3, so it's a weird spelling of cube. It's got all the mocks, the new mocks art around all the sides.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll hold, I think, 900 double sleeve cards. And they go anywhere from probably, I think, 60 to 80 bucks. Mm-hmm. So they are cheaper, but they're, once again, they're probably not as sturdy.
Yeah.
Because they're not made out of steel. So,
yeah.
A little bit of they're in between, right now mine's in a Return to Ravnica gift box or holiday box.
Yeah.
Box. And it's pretty sturdy for cardboard.
What I've heard is that the Return to Ravnica holiday box was a lot better than the Theros and Khons boxes in terms of sturdiness.
Yeah. Those were pretty cheap as they go.
Yeah. Get them out there. Get a Cube Vault, man.
Yeah. I'm wanting to get one. It's just, I think I can get a Cube Vault or I can get a dual land.
Yeah.
I'm dual land's winning right now, but we'll see. There are definitely pluses for both. So,
it's awesome, I think. Yeah. One of the things that excited me the most about seeing the Cube Vault was, or not the Cube, well, the Cube Vault and, later the CUB3 by Ultra Pro was that there is a tension in the community towards those products. So I'm sure at some point in time, Cube Vault will continue to innovate and other companies will continue to innovate to make storage that's better, more efficient, sturdier, smaller, hopefully. The only criticisms I've heard of the Ultra Pro box is that it's maybe a bit too big. You may not want to carry it around. It's not as portable just because it's literally a square. Just having that acknowledgement from not only Ultra Pro, but Wizards and other manufacturers is that we can hopefully continue to see goods developed in the next couple of years that cater to us as cubers. So I'm very excited for that. And also, if anyone is interested in buying sleeves, I think you probably want to buy them from Potomac Distribution. You can buy a case of KMC sleeves, unless you're getting them for really cheap. I think you can get a case of like 15 packs for $80 or something like that.
Wow.
Really good deal. Yeah. Really good deal. You buy them at like $6 a pack or something like that. But yeah, so.
Yeah, I actually had to get my perfect size ones from KMC. I got in on a Mastroth, and that was the only reason I got any of those that I did. Because those are pretty expensive as well, especially for double sleeving. So.
Yep.
All right, well, I think that's about all the topics we can go over for this episode. This has been one of our longer episodes, but, when we do set reviews, there's a lot of cars to go over. I was pretty happy with the set overall, and hope you all enjoyed the cast. You can reach us on YouTube or Twitter if you want to comment, or if there's a card that you think is really great that we missed, please reach out and tell us. So, is there anything you need to add, Zagil?
No, I think that's it. Once again, we love, I love the comments. If you have any comments, please leave them, either contact us on Twitter or leave them directly in the Reddit link, r/reddit.com/mtgcube. I hopefully try to interact with people there, or you can comment on the MTG cast comments, but, try to get some information. Tell us, if we miss anything, if we're crazy, if we're really, really smart, I don't know. Tell us what you guys want to hear. So definitely we enjoy doing this, and I enjoy, not only listening to our own podcast, but listening to, everyone else in the community, the Third Power, Joy of Cubing, the Magic Box, check those guys out as well. They put out great content, Joy of Cubing. Definitely check those guys out. So I think that's it for tonight. 2 hours and 10 minutes. I didn't think we were going to go this long, but I think... we covered everything.
Yeah, if y'all are still with us after this long, you deserve a cookie. So be sure and message me, and I'll see what I can do. No promises.
All right, guys. So thanks for listening. This is Zakiel and Drew from Quad Nines from What's in the Box, and we'll see you next time.